I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We get crazy, 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 Daddy. Let's get crazy, Daddy.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thrilled to be with you. Thrilled to be with Kyle Madsen on this Father's Day. I'm Whitey Gleason, 95.7 The Game. Yesterday, Kyle, I started something. I was on with Jason, and I know you've been on with Jason before. It was my first time, and I enjoyed it. And I started a Father's Day segment with Jason that I was planning to wrap up with you today. Unfortunately, listening today to Jason and Coase, and Jason had nothing to do with this, they ended up doing the bit that I was going to do with you today, and which tells me it probably wasn't that original of an idea as I thought. But that's okay. Be that as it may, I still wanted to wrap up the thread and also compare it to what they came up with in terms of, on this Father's Day, the best sports dad-son combos in sports history. All right? So let me just tell you a few that came up yesterday. And the reason I want to get your views here, I'd love your opinion on, hey, which is better, who should rank higher. It's incredible how many Bay Area ties there are to some of the most famous father-son sport combos in history. And I'll also tell you what they came up with today in terms of they did a Mount Rushmore. So this was their, Coase and Jason today, their Mount Rushmore, the best sports dad-son combos. They had, number one, the Mannings, Archie, and I think they just went 1-1. So they went Archie and Peyton. I would include the whole clan there.
Yeah.
Two, they had Dell and Steph and Seth. Maybe they did include the whole family. Thirdly, they had the Griffies, Junior and Senior. And then fourth, they went, I guess, Bobby and Brent Hull. Okay, which is not bad.
Hang on.
But, yeah. But to me, there are some really serious omissions there. So, yeah, the Mannings, the Currys, the Griffies, and the Hulls, all very famous, very well-accomplished sports families. But how do you not go Bobby and Barry, or speaking of Barry, Rick, John, Brent, Scooter, and Canyon Barry in your top four?
Leaving out the Bonzes for the Hulls? Or
thank you.
Like,
thank
what?
You.
And honestly, like all due respect to the Griffies, the Bonds family is the superior father-son combo.
Yes.
And it's not,
I believe,
it's not that close.
I believe it came down to like a tie, and then they went to Craig, who's, you know, one of the outstanding guys who runs the board, technical producer, and he's from Seattle. So he's like, well, Griffey's my favorite player, so we're going Griffey. So I think that's how that came down.
God, it's disgusting.
But as I know,
collusion.
I agree. Barry, all-time home run king. Bobby hit, what, 332? And they both played for the Giants. And let's not forget Michael and Clay Thompson. And I'm not saying they should be in the top four, but it's amazing how many, as I say, how many of these father-son combos had Bay Area ties. Who else can you even think of? Clay Matthews Sr., Jr., and Bruce Matthews. You probably remember Ray, well, not Ray, but Bob Arum and Brett Boone. Remember them?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I know they mentioned the Bosas, John with Joey and Nick.
Bosa!
Yep. Sign him to a 20-year deal right now.
Sign him to a 20-year deal now.
Thank you, George. One that has not come up, though, that I want your ruling on, because this is just sports father-son combos. Where do Mike and Kyle Shanahan rank in this? Because if Kyle Shanahan goes on to win a Super Bowl in the next 4 or 5 years or whatever, they'll have 3 Super Bowls between them as head coaches.
Yeah.
Which is very impressive to me.
The problem is, on my list, I have them behind Don and David Shula. I'm kidding. That was a joke. It was just a joke. I'm just kidding with you. I'm having some I'm having some fun with
you're
you.
You're so funny. No, that...
although, yeah, Don Shula obviously was tremendous. No, that's legit. I think when Kyle wins a Super Bowl this year, then it's like, you know, well, father, son, hello? What was funny about that? I think they'll be way up there, right? First father son,
yeah,
Super Bowl winning tandem. That'd be tremendous.
Yeah, I wanted to include them. Like I said, Kyle Shanahan, frankly, hasn't done anything as a head coach yet. He's been to a Super Bowl, but did not win one. So I think they stay kind of in the periphery right now. But if he does go on to win one or even two, I think that at some point you have to start tying them into the Bonds, Griffey, Hull conversation.
I agree with you. Some quick ones. Yeah, I agree with you. Appreciate the mentions here, the participation on the text line, 888-957-9570. Cecil Fielder from the 415. Cecil Fielder and, of course, the great Prince Fielder.
Mm.
That's when I first started feeling old Kyle in my life. Nobody cares, but when I realized, oh, this guy... His dad played. I remember his dad. And Prince Fielder is one of those guys. It's like, Prince Fielder, Cecil Fielder's his dad. He was just playing, wasn't he? That's when I really started to realize, okay, I've been here a while. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a little bit of a stunning, the Mahomes get a mention. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good
dad
one.
Dad didn't do much, but he was a major leaguer. Ironhead Hayward, Cam Hayward. Let's see. Yeah, you have to include Rocco and Clay's bro on the White Sox, Trace Thompson.
Oakland A's legend, Trace Thompson, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you and I, as far as what Coz and Jason did today, pretty much okay with it, but you got to have Bobby and Barry somewhere on your – if you're going to do 4 Mount Rushmore
and you
don't have Bobby and Barry on it, you need to start over. You did it wrong.
I agree with you. Like, but right. Look, here's it. Bobby Bonds is a 3-time All-Star. He won an All-Star Game MVP. He was a 3-time Gold Glover. You mentioned it. More than 300 home runs. He finished top 5 in the MVP voting for the entire league twice. He had a 14-year career. He was awesome. He was a really, really high-quality player for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And he was a very unique blend of power and speed. He came very close to being the first 40-40 guy, which I believe Jose Canseco did first. Bonds in 77 with the Angels. He was like 37 homers, 43 steals, something like that. He came very close. But he was that type of player. That unique blend of power and speed. So a great player. And then, of course, his kid wasn't bad either. All-time
home decent little
kid.
Player.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Now, speaking of the 49ers, it's a thrill to have Kyle with us today for – Yeah. Anyway, but especially because he runs the Candlestick Chronicles. Always enjoy working with Kyle. And I have a 49er question for you, Kyle, because I've been doing some reading here. First of all, we have this from Jeremy Fowler, ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. He mentioned on SportsCenter a day or two ago, the 49ers are working on Trey Lance's mechanics to make sure he's more compact. Quote, they wanted to get that down so that in training camp they can unleash the full arsenal. They can show him off as a runner, end quote. Okay, so that's the first piece of evidence that I have a question about here.
Okay.
Then we also have this from Tim Kawakami in The Athletic, and he talks about interviewing Shanahan on his podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Shanahan suggested that once camp begins, he'll see how Lance absorbed everything the 49ers threw at him and what he can put into practice at full speed. If Lance is ready for it, this will be a full-tilt camp competition. Again, it's Tim Kawakami. Now, I know we just had last week, we had Fields saying that, yeah, in Chicago, Andy Dalton's a guy. I get that. And the coach, Nagy, said, yeah, we promised Andy Dalton. He's the starter. That's where we are for now. The 49ers have indicated Jimmy's the guy, but they haven't made that promise. So what is the likelihood that we're going to see more Trey Lance than maybe we expected? And do you think there's a real chance here, as I'm starting to feel, that we may actually have a competition for the quarterback job in the preseason?
Yeah, definitely. Like, Trey Lance is the more talented player for sure. And if he is going to grasp enough of the offense that he can effectively orchestrate it, like, you're not going to keep the less talented player on the bench just because you said that Jimmy Garoppolo was a starter going into camp. No, Shanahan has made it pretty clear that if Lance is ready to go, he's going to play. And the thing on his mechanics, that was kind of one of the knocks on him coming out, was if you read draft analysts that watch and know this stuff, they would say that his mechanics were a little bit long. And Shanahan has said from 2017 all the way through, anytime he got asked about running quarterbacks, he would always say you have to be able to make the throws. When teams force you to throw, can you drop back and make all the throws? And Lance has the arm strength to do it, and now they're just trying to work on whatever mechanical flaws that they see that he needs to get ironed out. And his quarterback coach, Quincy Avery, has posted a couple videos of him working out with Mohamed Sanu. And I would be a mildly surprised if he starts week one. But at the same time, if he's taking his 40 days away from the team and learning the playbook and working on the things the team wants him to work on, it's super easy to see how, like, in the first week of camp, we get all these stories from beat writers that are at practice going, oh yeah, Trey Lance is the way better player. No, and Garoppolo is a notoriously bad practice player. If Lance comes in and it wouldn't shock me that much because of how many additional things he brings to the offense that Garoppolo lacks.
What's crystal clear to me, and I think Jimmy is almost certainly going to be starting at the beginning of the year. We'll see. That's just what I think. But I do think it's crystal clear that everybody benefits if you actually have this competition. I know some fans could say, wow, it's disrespectful to Jimmy because it's his job. But no, it's football. It's competition. If Trey Lance comes in and is given a chance to win the job from Jimmy, then it pushes Jimmy and makes Jimmy better,
right?
And Trey Lance, presumably, it accelerates his progress. It's just a win-win. I think the 49ers, I don't think that Kyle Shanahan gets enough credit for how he has handled this delicate situation with Jimmy going back to last year when they, you know, had their conversations with Tom Brady. I think the fact that Kyle's been up front with Jimmy seems to... He responded to it. He seems to respect it. I know he said, well, when they drafted this guy, you know, first I was thinking I wanted out, but no, I'm going to stick it out. And I think the fact that Kyle has been upfront about it, contrast that with Harbaugh. Remember when he was telling Alex Smith, oh, you're the guy. And then it turns out, well, he just flew back to see Peyton Manning in some secret workout.
Right.
It's a delicate situation, but I think Kyle has handled it extremely well to this point.
Yeah, and Jimmy's not dumb. Like, he would know if there was something going on. And the whole thing about this being Jimmy's job, it stopped being his job when they traded 3 first-round picks to move up and draft his replacement. So he's been on the other side of this, though, with Tom freaking Brady. Like, he was the other guy in this situation for the greatest quarterback of all time.
Right.
And Garoppolo can be as confident in himself as he wants to be. He knows he hasn't been able to even stay on the field. And then last year when he was on the field, he wasn't great. So I think if you have any self-awareness, which I think he does, or any intelligence, you look at this situation and you go, okay, I get it. I'm going to play my ass off and I'm going to win this starting job and I'm going to help the team win a Super Bowl, but I get why they would bring somebody else in. And now the onus is on Garoppolo to prove the 49ers wrong, frankly.
Mm-hmm. From the 707 here, hey guys, great show. Let me stop there. Kyle, do you think people text that just to get the host to read it? Do you think they think if I throw that little sugar in there?
No,
I think it's I think it's like a common courtesy. I think it's the radio version of like, hey, how are things?
Yeah,
like, you know, just the, how are things? Oh, good. Like, I think that's a very nice thing to do, but I do take it very personally every single time, and I carry it with me because there's a lot of not nice things that come across the text.
Appreciate that. And yeah, I'm having a blast with Kyle today, and we appreciate your listening and your participation, as I've said, at 888-957-9570. But I digress. Hey, guys, great show. Trey Lance is not going to be the starting quarterback. I know this guaranteed. Jimmy Garoppolo will start the season, and he's going to have to mess up real bad for Trey Lance to come in year one. That's Ron from the 707.
That's Kyle
Shanahan. I agree that there's very little chance Trey Lance starts the season as the starter, but I think he is going to be given a legitimate chance to do that.
Let me ask you, why do you think that there's very little chance? First, put a number on it.
Go ahead.
What percentage chance do you give him?
Okay, we're talking about Trey Lance being the starter week one.
Yes.
And we're taking injury off the table, right? I mean,
everybody knows that, obviously.
I'd say 1.5.
Wow. That's super low.
Yeah.
Why? Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't give him a chance. I just think Jimmy has such a head start. And this team, obviously, you know, they have very high goals this year. There's a lot of pressure on the organization. Jimmy has proven he can take a team to the Super Bowl. And, you know, here come the Texans. Well, he didn't really do it. The defense did it in the running game. I know. But he was the quarterback, and he put up big numbers, and they won. So he's proven he can do that. And Trey Lance is still an unknown commodity. I think clearly they are committed to Trey Lance to be their guy maybe as soon as halfway through this year. I just think the way it's set up, it's like, you know what? We'll give Trey a shot. Jimmy, to answer your question, in my opinion, Kyle, and I'm not the Candlestick Chronicle guys like you are, but in my opinion, Jimmy just has such a huge head start on Trey Lance that there's no way Trey catches him by the time the season starts.
And where I completely agree that Garoppolo has a head start, but I think Lance is A, smart enough, and B, physically talented enough to close that gap really quickly. And if the 49ers are in a situation where Garoppolo throws a couple interceptions in practice and Lance is just dominating with the second team, okay, well, now all of a sudden we're seeing Garoppolo and Lance split the first team reps. And if they do that, I think the talent in a practice situation is going to shine through. And there's the running element here that Lance brings that Garoppolo just doesn't. And if Shanahan thinks, because they're built to run the football. If you look at their receiving core and you look at the fact that they didn't go out to try and make a Julio Jones addition, they didn't address that position in the draft. They have so many question marks at the number three wide receiver spot. I think you're going to see a lot of two wide receiver sets this year because they want to run the football. And I think that the layer that Lance brings from that respect or in that aspect of the game is going to give him an edge that Garoppolo just does not have.
And I understand that.
If he grasps enough of the offense by the end of training camp, I could really see the 49ers going, hey, we're just jumping in feet first and mm-hmm. letting it ride with the rookie.
I think for the most part, and obviously the trade they made to get Trey Lance belies this, but I think Kyle has been, for the most part, and John Lynch, when it comes to moves, they've been fairly conservative. And so I expect them to be fairly conservative when it comes to this. And I think the best bet, the thing that makes the most sense is, and even if Trey Lance is like, they're really impressed, you have some Trey Lance packages early in the season, and you work up to the point where, all right, he's going to be the starter at some point. But I just think, given the fact that he hasn't played a game yet, to me, there's a lot of risk. Maybe I'm just 100% wrong, Kyle, but to me, there's a lot of risk if you start Trey Lance and he never played before, even if he has a great camp, and what if he struggles? Then what do you do? I mean, it's really difficult, in my opinion, to go, okay, well, Jimmy's going to start. And then you're actually, in my opinion, setting everything back. And if you just play it slowly and, like, Jimmy's, you know, unless Jimmy sucks, but if Jimmy's playing well and Trey Lance is in there and he's having an impact, you know, in certain packages where he's allowed to run the ball, option plays, whatever, RPOs, whatever, and then you work up and ramp up to get him a little more experience here or there so that when he's starting, he actually has played a little more. Sure. To me, that just makes more sense.
Yeah, no, and I follow that completely. And if that's how it plays out, like they said, I wouldn't be super surprised or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just what they traded up for, and you mentioned that they've been relatively conservative, except at the quarterback position. Like they traded a second round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo, started him a couple weeks later, and then gave him a massive contract off of 5 games. They could have easily just franchise tagged him and said, we'll see how it plays out. If there's any question about Lance, Garoppolo starts. If they think like, hey, he just doesn't quite have enough of the playbook down, or we don't like that, you know, he can't make this throw, or he's not seeing this throw, or whatever it is, they're not going to force it. But I just think, like, you put a 1.5%, I would put it at like 25 or 30% that Lance starts week one. Like I said, I wouldn't necessarily bet on it, but if you give me good enough odds, I'll take it, because I do think he is extremely smart. That's something any whether it's George Kittle or Fred Warner or Kyle Shanahan, everybody talks about how Trey Lance is as smart and as diligent from a classroom standpoint that he seemed like in meetings.
So what did you say you think, like, pardon me, you said like a 3.5 would be the number you'd put on it?
Yeah, like 30%. Call it 30. Yeah. Just an even 70-30.
That's a good number. I'll just say that.
That's a good number.
There, thank you. From the 510, Lance is in the NFC West. Mahomes was in the AFC West, so he dominated. Hawks, Rams, and Cards will feast, all caps, feast on a rookie quarterback who doesn't know NFL speed. From the 415, maybe you can answer this one from David. Thank you, David, for putting your name on it. But Kyle, what do you think of this? If Lance starts early on, will the Niners take heat for not having cut Jimmy and spent more in free agency?
No, because you need to insulate yourself from the rookie possibly struggling. You need to insulate yourself from injury a little bit. Like, having two good quarterbacks is not a bad thing. And if they went into this offseason with the goal of improving their quarterback room. And if they were going in with Trey Lance and Nate Sudfeld and Josh Rosen, they have not improved their quarterback room. In fact, they probably made it significantly worse. So I think they kept Jimmy Garoppolo with all intentions of him being the starter. And like I said, I give him a 70% chance to be the starter week one. It wouldn't shock me if Trey Lance comes in and performs above expectations to where they come out of camp and go, hey, this is the guy. Like, he might have a couple of growing pains throughout this season, but by the time week 18 comes and we're trying to get into the playoffs, this is going to be the guy that gives us the best chance to win a Super Bowl.
What do you think of the way this all came together? I mean, do you think all the Mac Jones talk, and by the way, I saw something today that said Mac Jones, Cam Newton competing for the Patriots starting job. And I thought, man, if I'm Cam Newton, I got to feel like, what do I have to do? But I understand he had a rough year last year and he was hurt. But how do you think this came together? Do you buy the company line, which was, we knew we'd get one of those three guys, so we traded up, knowing, and then we figured out? Do you think the narrative on Mac Jones was legit? I tend to think that Kyle, to a degree, had to be talked out of Mac Jones. I don't know. That's kind of my read. But where do you think that all was? Do you think Trey Lance was the guy all along? What's your read on how that all came together?
All right. This is my guess.
Okay.
I think Kyle Shanahan was sitting there at 12 and said, man, I really like Mac Jones. And I think that probably got out to some people that the 49ers really liked Mac Jones at 12. Mm-hmm. But then Shanahan started watching Trey Lance started watching the other quarterbacks, and Trey Lance caught his eye. And he said, we need to make a trade up ASAP because I might be in love with this dude.
Wow.
And so they went up to 3, fully confident that if there was something that came up in their study of Trey Lance or their interviews with Trey Lance or whatever it may be, that they didn't like him anymore, they were perfectly comfortable taking Mac Jones. But I think they made the trade up when they realized that Trey Lance was very likely going to be the guy. And they didn't want somebody else trading up. They didn't want it to become a bidding war or some kind of competition. So they just went up and got him and then finished their work on Lance. And he just confirmed everything they thought. And so they picked him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Jones was going to be the guy at 12. And they traded up for Trey Lance, but were ready to fall back on Jones if something came up throughout their talking to Lance and talking to people throughout their further study of him leading up to the draft. I think they were comfortable taking Jones, but I think they traded up for Lance. And I don't think Justin Fields was ever really a factor.
I don't think we're ever really going to know, and I don't think it matters if they got it right, and it looks to me like they did get it right. We'll find out soon enough, so it doesn't matter. But I do buy into the – I'm tired of saying it. I buy into the narrative, so I'm trying to back off of that. But I mentioned Michael Lombardi, who wrote the book Gridiron Genius.
Yeah.
He was on a podcast or something when we're all waiting to see what the 49ers were going to do, and he suggested, you know, I hear that they're kind of split – that Kyle wants somebody and Lynch wants somebody else. And so it's not hard for me to imagine that Kyle had to be talked off of Mac Jones. Now, if that's true, that's not necessarily a bad thing. To me, that shows, wow, okay, he's smart enough to listen to other people. But I don't have a hard time believing that. And I do think, as I say, that they got it right. On the text line here from the 310, Niners are set up like the Ray Lewis Ravens. They just need a quarterback with skills to manage the game, so Jimmy will start the entire year. Rookie can't manage. How about that, Kyle?
I disagree with that. I disagree with that entirely. The idea that a rookie can't manage a game, if he had the exact same skill set as Garoppolo, maybe, but he has a bigger arm than Garoppolo. He can run. They can design runs for him. Teams have to account for him on boot actions as a runner. There's just so many added layers that come to their offense with Lance starting that Garoppolo doesn't bring. And the idea that Garoppolo, like Peter King put the over under on starts for Garoppolo at 10. And he said he's taking the over, which like I have a problem with, like then set a better over under for yourself. Like, 10 and I'm taking the over, then make it 11. Like, you know,
that ain't right.
No, but I wouldn't bet on Garoppolo starting 10 games having nothing to do with Trey Lance. I don't have any evidence that Garoppolo can get through 10 games healthy. So that is a factor that has to come into this as well. Like saying Garoppolo is going to start the whole year. Okay, maybe he might. And if he comes in and takes a little bit of a step forward from where he was in 2019, because the thing that gets lost in 2019, if you go look at his last like 8 games, he was on like a 4,200 yard, 28 touchdown pace. He was really good through the last half of that year. And then just not as effective in the playoffs. So if he picks up where he left off at the end of 2019 and he's pacing for 4,200-4,300 yards and darn near 30 touchdowns and like, you know, 9, 10, 11 interceptions, they're not just going to pull him because they're going to be winning a lot of games. But if he gets hurt or he's just kind of lateral and, you know, he's throwing a couple interceptions and, you know, they're struggling a little bit in the red zone and teams are stacking the box against him because Garoppolo can't beat him downfield and they get through their first 6 games and they're 3-3, I can't imagine they're going to go, okay, yeah, we need it. We still need to keep the game manager in there. They got Trey Lance because Trey Lance is going to be able to take over games, or at least they think. They're not looking to have, they're not building around a game manager. If they wanted to do that, they would have just waited until the second or third round and tried to develop a quarterback. No, they need a quarterback who is going to be able to win games for them. That's their goal with Trey Lance. They're not building, here's our offense. We need a game manager. No. You need a guy who's not going to turn the ball over, but who can put the team on his back and throw it 45 times if they need to.
All right. We may have to bet some of my wife's Omu Raisu on that Peter King over-under. I kind of like the over as well. We'll get back to that, though. Coming up, while baseball cracks down on cheating pitchers, I'll tell you what the NBA needs to crack down on. Please, that's next. It's Kyle Madsen and Whitey Gleason. Father's Day, thanks for being with us today on 95.7 The Game.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I mean, what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Whitey Gleason and Kyle Madsen today on 95.7 The Game.
Who's your daddy?
Yeah. Kyle, on this Father's Day, this has nothing to do with Father's Day, but which is more stunning to you? Which of these three things is more stunning to you? The Giants had the best record in baseball. The Clippers are in the conference finals. Or Ray Ratto is doing endorsements. Which of those is the most stunning reality to you on this Father's Day?
It's the Ratto endorsement, by it's in a tier all its own. Followed second by the Giants, and then third the Clippers.
I hate you.
The Clippers.
I know. Yeah.
Good for him. What do you think is the ideal matchup based on the teams that are left in the finals for the NBA? If you could get Commissioner Silver, and you probably will get him on with Steiny, Guru, and Dibs, and maybe you'll talk to him, you know, there'll be one answer he'll give on the air, but off the air when he's talking to you, he'll say, you know, Kyle, this is how I really feel. And what do you think his answer will be? Who would he most want to see in the finals?
Kyle runs the show.
thank you, Brian.
Probably the Clippers, right? I mean, just because of the big market thing.
Who do I want to see?
No, who do you think the NBA from the... I'd love to know what you think, but also the NBA, if they had their druthers.
Yeah. Sorry, I was so worried about smashing that drop, I didn't listen. it has to be the Clippers for sure, just to get the LA market in there. And then I guess Philly, probably, the 76ers.
Probably, huh?
Maybe Atlanta, but I think Philly offers a better storyline. And Joel Embiid, having his personality on that stage, I think would be good for the NBA.
Right. I'm sure they would have loved to have seen the hated Nets in there, Kevin Durant, Kyrie, and Harden.
Course.
It wasn't to be. But, yeah, they could, Doc and everything, a lot of personality. So, yeah, I would guess, I think you're right. That would be L.A. against Philly. We'll see. Doesn't appear likely, but who knows? I think Philly has a shot. I don't know about the Clippers.
Yeah, the ideal matchup for me is Hawks Suns. I just think that would be a blast of a series that whether you like the NBA or not, would be impossible not to watch. It would just be a super fun kind of back and forth, really even series, I think. But the game 7 in Philly, like that's tough for a young team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know Bogdanovich, I think he's got his knee is, he's got a bulky knee on top of DeAndre Hunter's out. People don't talk about that. We look at all the superstars that are out. There are a lot of them. But, DiVincenzo out for the Bucks. Yeah, it's the playoffs. You got to make do. But, I mean, they miss him a lot. So we will see. Now, we know that in baseball, tomorrow's a big day, and we'll talk more about this, the fact that baseball umpires are off the leash tomorrow, and they can crack down on major league pitchers. We'll see how that goes. We'll get to it. Here's something that looking at other sports, Kyle, this is something I think the NBA needs to crack down on. And please tell me if you're wrong, because I don't mean to sound like, this isn't the way they did it when I used to watch basketball.
Right.
But last night, great game, right? Great contest last night. The overtime, 115 to 111. Just a great game. I found myself just really frustrated over two things. One, at least half the time, probably a lot more than that, at least half the time when a guy shoots a jump shot on a three, he falls down.
Yes.
At least half the time. And it's like, oh my goodness, get up, please. It's just, it's like reverse flopping, because traditionally flopping is done by the defensive player, but it's a form of flopping, and which is supposed to be illegal. And I get it. When the stakes are high, well, you might as well try to get a call. And sometimes they get it, but it drives me crazy. It's like, oh my goodness, every time someone shoots a three, falls down. And then the other thing is all of the complaining. And I know, again, the stakes are very high. And, you know, Kevin Durant, PJ Tucker last night, this was do or die. So I understand the emotion, but something is lost to me when every time there's a call, the players not only disagree, but they're like imploring the heaven with the arms outstretched, like, he hacked me. And I just think it's a bad look. It's understandable, but I think it's a bad look for the NBA.
That bothers me way less than the pump fake to get the guy in the air and then lean forward or to the side to draw the contact and then throw a shot at the rim. Mm-hmm. That bothers me more, because if you're going to complain about a call, like what, like whatever, dude, it just makes the player look dumb. It doesn't affect my viewing experience at all, because that's just downtime between the plays. I really wish the NBA, like, make it an offensive foul if it's the offensive player generating the contact like that.
Yes, that should be easy to do. And it's funny when you watch a game and Jeff Van Gundy's doing that, and he says this a lot. He wonders, well, wait a minute, the offensive player is creating the contact.
Right.
How is that not a foul? And that gets to what I think for me is the problem with all the complaining. Again, I understand the complaining, but, you know, the NBA has had over the last, 20 years, whatever, the credibility of the officiating, the integrity of the officiating has been called into question.
Right.
I mean, that's the main reason why we have the stupid final 2-minute report, because, you know, you had Donaghy and you had years ago, you had a lot of people looking at these games and going, look, they're jimmying the results to get the teams they want in the TV games.
Right.
So that is an issue. And I think when you have constant complaint, and again, not just complaining like, hey, bad call, but when you have like guys like, what are you, PJ Tucker last night, what are you doing? In total disbelief, I think it undermines the officiating. Now, I know years ago in the preseason, the NBA experimented with teeing up players like, you can't complain. And then once the season started, they would allow them to complain again. And I don't think it had much of an impact. And I know that's kind of I think it's become an issue now, players' ownership issue, your contractual issue, because the players say, I have to be able to talk to the officials. And I understand that. And they say, I got to be able to find out why he called it. But the so maybe that is a get off my lawn moment. But to me, just the constant complaining like that, it's hard to watch, and it undermines the officiating.
So it's a matter too of, I get it, but I also don't know how, like, you're in the heat of this competition and you're guarding a guy and you're working your ass off. He gets by you a little bit, but you stick with him. You try and block the shot. You get his wrist, foul called. I think it's more like upset that a player like lost that particular matchup. Like they're upset that they fouled the guy, and they're just kind of aiming it at the official.
Sure.
And there's times where it's like it undermines the officiating a little bit until you see the replay and it's like, yeah, that guy hacked the guy across both arms and got his face a little bit. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
That just kind of makes the player look dumb. And I don't, like I said, I get where people have an issue with it. I personally, like, it doesn't make me want to turn the game off as much as, like, James Harden, for example, does this a lot, where he just runs in and gets any kind of contact, throws his head back, flails his arms in the air, whistle.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's, yeah. And I get it. As a defender, you didn't do anything. So, of course,
right.
You're going to go to the official and say, like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah.
And so, okay, so let's say PJ Tucker is guarding James Harden, and James Harden does the, you know, bump the shoulder into the guy's chest, throw the hands up, throw the head back, scream, foul. Tucker's like, what the hell? And then he has to go guard Kevin Durant, who does the rip through, and he gets a piece mm-hmm. of the arm. Now he hits the three plus the foul. And now you're PJ Tucker going, all right, well, what the hell am I supposed to do here? How do I play defense?
Mm-hmm. Then you got Kevin Durant's mom, John, at you.
That was
right
great.
From the front row.
How great was that moment, by the way, at the end of the game with her and KD?
Yeah, that was nice.
It was great.
That was nice. Yeah,
was so good.
And I know we talked earlier about Ethan Strauss' book, Victory Machine, and he writes in there about how they had kind of, for whatever reason, a falling out, KD and his mom, mm-hmm. when he was here, because I guess he handed off his finances to somebody else and she had done them and she stopped going to games.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so they reconciled. And anybody who remembers, you know, when he dedicated his MVP award to his mom knows how close they are. But that was very sad. So, yeah, that was a wonderful moment last night. It was amazing. Putting everything else that we're just talking about aside, seeing KD at the end of that game, And just seeing, you know, a human moment you can relate to, as hard as it is for us to relate to those guys and everything they can do. But he was just flat out exhausted, right? And he was almost too exhausted to be disappointed when that game ended, because it's like, man, I just don't have anything left, Ma.
And that's why I can't. That's where I don't. And again, getting away from the officiating for a second, that's where I don't understand. Some, like, at the end of that game, if you watched the way Kevin Durant played down the stretch and how that game ended, how do you walk away from that going, ha, the Nets choked?
Right.
Like, what? Like, everybody on that floor, or everybody on that court, put everything on the floor. Kevin Durant especially, over the last two games. James Harden playing through the injury that was supposed to keep him out for the series. Like, it was really enjoyable as a sports fan seeing athletes at the top of their game, two of the best in the game, put it on the line like that. And in the era of you know, load management and, you know, watching the minutes and stuff, seeing that was like, man, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. 888-957-9570. You know, MLB starting tomorrow, they're cracking down on pitchers using illegal substances. What in other sports would you like to see the leagues crack down on? And I see your point about the officiating, Kyle, but how about the players falling down on the threes? You're okay with that too? I mean, I understand it, but just to me, it's just excessive where every time somebody shoots a three, down he goes. It's embarrassing to me.
Yeah, I wonder a little bit, and I know I played baseball at a high level in travel ball, but
you played travel ball. You were right. All travel ball catcher.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Of all the travel ball catchers, I numbered among them. He's a ball.
Did you
grabber.
Start? Were you a starter?
Yeah, of course. Come on.
Yeah. Okay.
You think I would have played if I wasn't starting? No. I wonder sometimes. You know, obviously there's times where it's guys trying to get a call, but other times I wonder a little bit if it's just kind of like a self-preservation thing. Because, like, if you take a three and you jump forward a little bit and a guy's coming toward you, it's just like falling so you don't awkwardly, like, land on an ankle or something.
Well, that I get. That I do but, get. Having but, done that once in pickup, yeah, it really hurts. And, yeah, for an NBA player, I could understand why you desperately would want to avoid that.
That's why I think Steph Curry falls down in the lane so often. It's to not, like, land hard on his ankles or his feet. He just takes the one step and, you know, calmly falls and slides on the floor and then gets up and goes. But to your point, players do that because you can draw fouls that way. Jumping into guys, kicking the legs out, and they did a pretty good job this year of going with no calls or an offensive foul when a player kicks his legs out unnecessarily or excessively. But again, I'm going to bring up James Harden. He does that as bad as anybody, where you shoot the jumper and then you, like, jackknife your legs so the defender runs into you because they have to close out. But even if they're giving you space, you're now eating up their space with your legs and then falling down. And now it's a big calamity and the refs. I think if they officiate that differently, I think you get a lot less complaining, especially from defenses.
I think James Harden, and it's not his fault, he didn't make these rules, and right. He has taken advantage of them expertly, no question. But I really think he's bad for basketball.
I do too.
Yeah, the way he takes advantage of the gray area, and again, the fact that the league allows him to do that. One thing I would like to see a crackdown on, and you touched on it, when you see a guy like James Harden, and he will wrap up another player's arm and draw a foul. You know, the rip through is one thing, because at least it's like Durant. You know, it's like, okay, well, he did hit your arm. But when you see Harden, and he did it last night, he does it all the time. When he reaches around and wraps somebody's arm up and then flails and gets the call, it's like, no, please.
So ridiculous.
Yes, it's not good for any of us. I really think it's bad for the game. And it's hard to watch the way he plays. And, I get back to, I coached a little bit here or there. Young players see that, and they emulate that stuff, and it just makes me sad, Kyle.
It becomes a game of manipulating the officials rather than putting on. And this is not to say that James Harden is not an immensely skilled player. He is. And that's part of why it's so frustrating watching his game be whittled down to, all right, let's see if I can bait the refs into a foul call. Because it's like, dude, you could cook your defender and score without that. Like, just go to the rack, try and score. And then you might get a foul, but you're going to get a bucket. Like, do your step back three, You don't need to kick the legs out and make it a big thing. And like you said, other players, not just young players, other NBA players pick this up. Because if you can go to the free, if you can score 20 points at the free throw line, you're going to do it. And if the refs are going to call it, players are going to take advantage. Again, this is not putting it on the players. The goal is to win. It's not to be aesthetically pleasing. And if you can go get your team 20 free points, you're going to. And that's where the NBA has a problem. And this is not to put all the onus on the officials, because these players are bigger than they've ever been. They're faster than they've ever been. Officiating is hard.
It's impossible. I really think it's honestly impossible, because you can't call everything. So then at some point it becomes subjective, and then everybody's behind the eight ball.
Right, and now you get inconsistent calls where, okay, well, early in the game, we're going to call it a little tighter. Okay, now late in the game, this has been a foul all game, but we're tied with 3 minutes left, so we're going to let him play. Like, that's got to be frustrating. And for a player, like, okay, I adjust that, you know, you play with one officiating crew one night, and they're calling everything. Okay, so now you're adjusting how you play defense, but now you're playing the next night with an officiating crew that's not going to call anything, and you're getting whacked on the other end. And it's like, wait, I fouled out last night, barely touching a guy, and now I'm getting clobbered with this reffing crew. Like, there's a tension there that I don't know how to, I don't have a good way to fix it, because like you just said, officiating clean consistently is impossible.
That's one of the things that I thought really, I think it bodes well for the Bucks going forward. Last night at the end of that game, and we've talked about the fact, everyone who watched the game knows, that the Nets were shorthanded, they were exhausted, they didn't have Kyrie, Harden limping around. That said, that game got very physical. The officials let everybody play, and the Bucks found a way to get through that, even though it was against a compromised opponent. It was on the road, overtime, game seven. They showed a grittiness that they had not shown the last couple of years, so I think that's a really good sign for the Bucks going forward. I like to think, as somebody who likes Giannis, I think perhaps the Bucks, even again against a compromised opponent, I think maybe they figured out a few things in this series, and I think they got a really good chance to get all the way into the finals.
It is bad news for whichever team comes out of the East. Maybe a little bit different for the Sixers because they have Joel Embiid, but I'm sorry, Clint Capella is not hanging with Giannis if Giannis decides, like, okay, I'm going to go hang out on the block and I'm just going to torch whoever defends me. And if he does that, if he plays 10 feet and in, and I understand there's going to be times where he stretch it out and, you know, maybe he takes a couple threes here and there. But in crunch time, when they need a bucket, Giannis has to be their go-to guy, where he uses his strength and his length. He did that last night and it worked. He scored 40 freaking points. And I think if he's going to continue doing that, they're going to be hard to beat.
Kyle, I asked you beginning of the segment, which is more strange, Giants winning, Clippers in the conference finals, or Ratto doing endorsements, and you went Ratto all the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Clippers have lost. It's a final now. Game one of the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers have lost, but another terrific contest. Suns over the Clippers in game one, 120-114. So the Suns, here come the Suns. Without Chris Paul, they post a 120-114 win. They take game one. Of course, the Clippers are going, yeah, we always go down 0-2. No problem.
Yeah.
We always fall down 0-2. But the Suns with the game one victory today in the Western Conference Finals.
Get Terrence Mann some help.
Yeah.
No, I actually was. So Phoenix has been hanging out and chilling while the Clippers have been battling their asses off from 0-2 down. And I wondered if going into this game, if the Suns' time off was actually going to be a detriment, where they were a little sleepy while the Clippers, you know, they've been playing and they come out fired up. But you could tell down the stretch, the Clippers were just out of gas. Their threes started coming up short, and the Suns were, you know, well-rested and outlasted them, especially in the fourth quarter.
I think one of the keys to this series will be whether the Clippers going small can do to Ayton what they were able to do to Gobert. Of course, when you have Terrence Mann scoring 39 points, it's easy to do. But Ayton today, he was 10 of 14. He scored 20 points, hit 10 of 14, had 9 rebounds and a couple of assists. A very good player, offensively probably more skilled than Gobert. So game one going to the Suns. Paul George, though, did his part today as he continues to carry the Clippers like the true superstar. He is 34 points. Terrence Mann, though, 9 points today. Wah, wah. But yeah, he had three of four shots, and he hit all three of his threes. He actually didn't have a bad game.
Yeah, but Paul George missed a couple threes down the stretch. Can he get it done in crunch time? Does Paul George have the clutch gene? We'll see, Whitey.
That's a good point. And Reggie Jackson with 24. What do you think about Game 7 coming up? What you have? I think we agree. We're going both going Sixers on this one, right?
Man, I
you don't
think
want to
so.
Do it.
I think it's going to be the Sixers. They're at home. They've been in these spots before. But I really don't want to bet against the Hawks. I think Trae Young is just that dude. Like, as long as he's on the court, they're going to have a chance. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be really good. But I think the Sixers pull it out.
I think so. And if they don't, I mean, what does that do to Doc's legacy? I guess we'll get to that bridge. Yeah, cross that bridge if and when we get to it. On the text line here from the 510, sure seemed like Giannis did a lot of clearing people out of his way with his left arm and elbow, Mike, in the 510. There's no question he did. Yes. As I said, they let him play, and he took advantage of that. Can you imagine trying to guard somebody like Giannis as with the length he has if they're allowing him to clear you out with his left arm? You have no chance.
You want to talk about impossible defense? Like, what do you do? If that continues to go uncalled, which I think it probably will, man, I don't know who defends him.
Mm-hmm.
Even a guy like Joel Embiid, who's a very good defender, if Giannis is able to get that elbow in there and kind of shove him out of the way, it's a wrap.
Yeah, he's got such length. Yeah, so anyway, it's a final. Yeah, go ahead.
He's just some of the shots he makes, it's like, oh, there's three guys there in one Euro step. He's around all three. It's like, oh, he's still 3 feet from the basket, but he just extends that arm and just kisses it off the glass. It's so sick.
Yeah, I think it's, wasn't it like seven steps he can go length of the court on, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but they had it on 60 minutes, and I'll have to double check that. It's something ridiculous, like with a full head of steam. He can go length of the court like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe it's 6. And he's like, okay, I'm there. Layup. It's unbelievable. Here's what's coming up. Baseball cracking down on cheating pitchers, how the sticky substance crackdown, which is supposed to start tomorrow. It may already be working. That's next with Whitey Gleason, Kyle Madsen on Father's Day on 95.7 The Game.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.